Hi everybody, Ethan here. Today is a very special Bad Science because we're not talking about a movie, we're talking about a video game. GoldenEye? Zelda? Breath of the Wild? Super Mario Brothers? No, not any of those top best games of all time. It's Among Us, everyone's favorite space iPhone game where you lie to your friends and have nervous breakdowns and panic attacks over something that where there's no prizes. Anyway, it's my duty to inform you that our big game of Among Us is actually on Seeker's YouTube. We all recorded our videos so you can see our ridiculous reactions, and some of that might be referenced in the episode, so I just want to let you know we recorded this right after a vicious, aggressive game of Among Us. If you haven't played it, I would recommend it. It's super fun. So yeah, once again, the game and the video I'm referencing during the episode is at Seeker's YouTube. Go check it out, and I hope you enjoy the show. Bad science. Did the movie get it right? Bad science. Or will we have to fight? Hi everybody, welcome to Bad Science. This is the show where we normally break down the science of a film, but we're not breaking down film today, we're breaking down a video game. It's the first time we're ever doing a video game, and we chose to do Among Us, the popular cell phone video game. You might have heard some of the audio of us playing previously. I actually don't know how it's going to work yet. But joining me to discuss this riveting adventure that we just went on is three old friends of ours. One is the co-host of the Science of Self-Care podcast. She's a comedian, science communicator, and neuroscientist. You may remember from our episode about 51st Dates. It's Dr. Shannon Odell.
Hello. So happy to be here. Thank you, Ethan.
So happy to have you once again. And to honestly just feel better about myself after playing Among Us with you, because it seemed like you were having almost as much trouble as I was having.
Yeah. I mean, I was having trouble emotionally.
Yeah.
But also physically in the game.
Just the fact that you had questions about what to do and stuff made me feel like, oh, okay, I'm not totally useless. Playing with us and joining us on the pod are our two old buddies that were on the very important Twister episode. They also worked with some guy who's a lot less important named Conan O'Brien. They're writers and podcasters. Aaron Blayard and RJ Theinman.
Hi. Thanks for having us.
Thank you so much.
That was fun playing that game. I'm not a big gamer, and I kind of got into that. I really enjoy trying to figure out who's lying to me and lying to people.
Yeah. Puts you in a little bit of a detective's shoes.
Yeah.
Blay, you are a gamer, from what I understand. You have a podcast that is like dedicated to gaming. Is that correct?
That's right. That's right. For Conan, for Team Coco, I do a podcast called Good Game, Nice Try, where every week we talk about video games and have famous gamers on. And so I've played a lot of Among Us. Mm-hmm. It's always interesting to play with people who haven't played before, because there's a bunch of different, when you start playing a lot, there's a bunch of different strategies that I'm sure we'll get into.
Okay.
But I like to use the strategy of the blitz, which is very...
I noticed that.
Yeah, which is true. But that's actually the strategy I use, which is just remaining crazy through the entire thing. So you never know. Because Among Us is all about if you are an imposter or not. So I play the game trying to set everybody's compass for me to a certain north, which is I'll type in all caps. I immediately accuse people.
Yes.
I am just brash and nuts. So then when I am an imposter, everyone's like, oh, he's just always crazy.
That's his thing. Right.
So yeah, which is true. That's kind of the mode that I fit into. But people have different strategies. And so it's always fun to play with people for the first time to see how they kind of work out how they're gonna play the game.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I thought that was one of the more entertaining parts of the game, was just being able to, as almost an audience member, it's like, on one hand, I'm trying to just figure out how this damn game works. And then on the other hand, I'm just listening to your analysis of everything.
And the other thing, too, is like, you'll notice when I play, I immediately say, get away from me. Get away from me. Stop it. Get away from me.
Yeah.
Because
what was that about?
When I'm a crewmate, it's funny, because also, you know, I do a lot of live streaming, so it's fun to watch. Like, get away from me. Get the fuck away, you know.
Sure.
But then also, when I'm an imposter, I can say that when I'm by myself and people think I'm with other people, because I've already started to say, get away from me, get away from me. So when I'm stalking someone, I can say that, and people are like, oh, it's just Blay being crazy. Right. But that's the whole thing is
he's not following me. He's trying to get me away from him.
Right. Exactly. And so I right off the bat am coming in with a very strong character, very big choices. And so everyone, then when I need to make those choices to help me be an imposter, I've already done the work.
See, my strategy was to always over explain what I was doing. And then when I was the imposter, as I was murdering someone, I would say, I'm in the room doing the circle thing or whatever as I'm murdering them. Mm.
You know, what's not to jump right into the science.
Please do.
It's what's really interesting about Blaze Way of playing is it immediately creates this kind of dichotomy of like in-group and like competition versus other. And, you know, we know from neuroscience and psychology that if you create competition between groups, the like salience of your in-group becomes stronger. So basically what you're trying to do is create a situation where you're acting like you're in-group with the crewmates when you're the imposter by saying, get away from me, and that you're against everyone. And then everyone's kind of getting on your team.
Wow. And also, and I will say too, I think one thing that I've noticed that by me immediately being a big presence in the room, people who don't have the same kind of self-confidence or don't have that same kind of the ability to push back start shrinking away and then are more willing to go my way. If I come at you immediately and you're not ready for it, then it's a boundary issue. And all of a sudden I'm in your space. And then I'm the guy who is starting to say this, you know, this person's guilty and not, and putting myself above suspicion, which
is how you live your life, dude. This is it.
Works.
I mean, it's a strategy. I got, it's a good strategy.
I got to, hey man, I got two Emmys. What do you want?
Where do you think those came from? Not big choices?
That's true though. But I will say
he did like, murder and two people too. That's how I got
them. Oh, they're not mine. Yeah, I murdered other people for them.
Yeah. You're a thief.
They're very sharp. The wings are very sharp. You could stab people. But no, I will say like that's worked for me. You know, and in video games in general, I think for me it's like the best defense is a good offense. Because it's a video game. What's the worst that happens? You die in the game and you play another round. So why not make big choices? Why not save the game quickly before you jump off the waterfall? Who cares?
Yeah, I'll also that's what say it's for. That the not like the people who are a little bit more skittish will just naturally come across as suspicious. So you have to either just go all out or be more quiet. Like your strategy. If it's to be just yourself and kind of timid, I think you're just going to get voted out a whole bunch.
Yeah, that's. I mean, that happened to Caroline who we were playing with, who I think was just probably being herself.
Just a nice person,
very sweet and a little
mistake.
Shy.
Never be yourself. Mistake. Yeah. Take it from me. I'm a monster.
Yeah, there was, I believe, a moment where Blay accused her and everyone just believed you and instantly voted for her. It was crazy.
I killed an innocent person.
Yeah, that's probably
and got
a good
a third Emmy. Got a third Emmy.
Is that, Shannon, do you suggest that as far as like when you know that you're going to have to be in a situation where you're going to have to lie or like bend the truth or just convince somebody that you're like more qualified than you are, maybe? Is that the plan? Is just to like kind of make a big choice, go in hard, you know, not seem, right. I don't know, timid or afraid at all?
I mean, I feel conflicted saying this because basically you're telling me, what's the science? How can we make all our listeners better liars in their lives?
I mean, sort of. We all got to do what we got to do to, you know, survive.
The research is a little mixed. Some of the things that we know is that lying in general takes a lot of this executive function. So it takes this, it's not something that is, you know, so natural to us. We have to make a decision that, you know, going against the actual plan of events is not beneficial. So I'm going to use cognitive control to sort of create a story. Mm-hmm. So one thing that they find is that sometimes it takes people a little bit longer to come up with a story when they're lying, unless it's super rehearsed, which I think is a little bit of like what Blay is playing of like, just come up with a story and just blast it at people. There's no hesitation. So people aren't suspicious. Because I think we naturally, if people are delaying, think, oh, that must be suspicious. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of other things that people, you know, have said makes you could tell a liar if they do this, this, and this. That research is a little bit mixed. Like for a long time, people used to think if you looked at a certain up in a certain direction. Have you heard about this? For
sure. Yes.
Like if you look to the left, up to the left, that means you're lying, and up to the right, you're telling the truth. There's been research on that that isn't true or doesn't debunked. Seem to be true. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I think it's just interesting to think about because everyone's so different and some people are really good at lying.
As a good liar, I think that for me, the best lies have half truths in them. So when I think that that's kind of the thing. And that's kind of what RJ was saying in terms of like, he's lying, but he's saying he's in the room. He's lying about whether or not he's the imposter, but he is saying the actual room that he's in. Because mm-hmm. then you're not really, I think the key to lying well is to believe that you're not lying. And to do that well, you wrap a lie around a kernel of truth. Mm-hmm. And so again, what that would be in my example is my truth being I'm this brash character who's very loud. So then it doesn't matter what I'm saying because I'm leaning into the truth that I'm this character doing this thing. Rather than having to make up this story or this lie kind of from whole cloth.
I'm interested to hear from Shannon about what it, like Blade just said, he's a good liar. I consider myself a good liar. I actually genuinely enjoy playing these types of games because I do well at them and I like lying. So I wonder what does
red
it
flags
say?
All over the
like
place.
What is it? What does it say about us?
You're to say this on a podcast. You're to tell.
Yeah, no.
Your wife is listening from the other room, just one tear
just
down
at the
her
games,
cheek.
I'm not like you know. I'm not a crazy you know lying in real life person, but I do genuinely like doing it. So what does it say about me that I am good at it and I like lying? Why is that so weird? I feel like guilty about.
I don't think you should feel guilty. I think obviously a lot of people like these games. You know, Among Us is so popular. I think there's probably lots of parts to it. So I think before we get to the lying, but just why do people like this game? People like trying to figure out what other people are thinking. I think that's kind of like a natural thing that we like to do as humans. Humans have evolved these highly complex social networks in their brain, and we have the ability to do something which is called theory of mind, which is the idea that you can think about and conceptualize what other people's like motivations are outside of yourself. We might think like, of course, that's just, you know, of course you can put yourself in someone else's shoes. That's a easy thing to do, but it's actually kind of cognitively pretty advanced, and children can't even do it until a certain age. They can't think of what other people's motivations are. And we have this theory of mind, and that's part of why we like, you know, storytelling, and we like reading, we like movies, we like the idea of being able to put ourselves in other people's mindsets and sort of like think about their psychology. So I think that's one part of it, is that we just like trying to see who's sus and kind of talk about what their motivations are.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of it too, as you were saying that, it made me think of like literally imposter syndrome, which I feel a lot in like work and what, you know, whatever. So there's a bit of like almost gamesmanship in just tricking myself that I can do something myself. You know,
yeah. I mean, it's like a safe stress environment. There is something a little bit stressful about, right. You know, being an imposter, and we get that like little adrenaline kick, and it's in a very safe environment, which is just like no stakes.
And RJ likes to murder. That's really what it is.
Yeah.
You're a murderer. You always have been and always will be. You love the murder part.
Right.
You love pushing them out of the airlock and seeing as they slowly, like Alan Rickman at the end of Die Hard, you like fall down, like
yeah, it's less
ice forms on their face and their heart stops beating, and RJ's just like sexually aroused by murder. Say it.
Sexually aroused.
Well, that's me. I just put a little. See, that's a kernel of truth in a lie.
Right.
I'm okay. Sexually aroused by murder. And you like to murder. There's the lie and there's the kernel of truth. No, but in video games, again, they're, you know, video games, again, obviously fantasy, wish fulfillment. But, you know, one of the things that I love particularly about Among Us and games like this are you know, being a comedian and being a writer, you know, a lot of comedy comes from misdirection. It comes from surprise. You know, you talk about the rule of three in comedy. The third thing is always funny. And that's because you're setting up a pattern, then you're breaking it. And when we're laughing because, you know, the tribe of monkeys that all humans used to be, as I understand it, would laugh to show the rest of the tribe that something surprising isn't dangerous. Hmm. And so there is, in that world, when you're writing a joke, you kind of need to lie to somebody because you're going to misdirect them to make them laugh. So that's kind of why I like Among Us as well. As a writer, as a storyteller, as a comedian, it plays into that kind of storytelling misdirection thing. And it's very pleasurable in a sexually arousing way to also murder people while fulfilling that part of it.
Scratches two itches.
Correct.
All right, we're going to take a quick break and we'll be right back.
Hey everyone, this is Jesse David Fox, host of Good One, a podcast about jokes. I am proud to announce that I have personally won the Streaming Wars. And there's a new docu-special on Peacock based on our own Vulture podcast. Good One, a show about jokes, follows Mike Birbiglia as he develops new material, taking audiences through the process of transforming personal stories into stand-up. Featuring interviews with Mike's family and comedy colleagues like Seth Meyers, Hasan Minhaj, and Asko Akatsuka, Good One, a show about jokes, is streaming now only on Peacock.
The break is over. Here we go, back to the show about science.
I wanted to ask about the mob mentality aspect of this, or herd mentality aspect of this, because I definitely felt like I was in the mob listening to Blay accuse people, and just like I viscerally felt like my mind is being taken over. I believe him. I don't know why I do.
So I have that effect on a lot of people.
Yeah. Well, what was happening? How did I get hijacked? And how can we, like, I don't know, be more aware of that in society?
I mean, I think, again, thinking back, we've evolved these brains where being in a social group was very beneficial, right? So we find, you know, being in group to be very rewarding. Our brain releases that dopamine. We're like, yes, yes, we're part of the gang. And what research finds, you know, because we can, psychologists have theorized that when you're in a group, you can kind of lose your sense of self, right? And you'll just go with a leader and kind of compromise your beliefs, your morals. And they could they can actually test this in a lab. I was reading this really interesting study where they found, you know, they put people in groups against each other. And what you see normally is if you ask someone about their morals and their beliefs, we see certain areas of the brain light up, most specifically this area of the brain called the medial prefrontal cortex. And it's kind of associated with your, like, your sense of self. And when we put people in these, like, kind of mob mentality like situations, we ask them to, like, talk about their decisions, all of a sudden this medial prefrontal cortex is kind of dampened, because they're in this kind of group think of, like, it's not necessarily their beliefs. It's not their sense of self. It's, I'm doing this for the greater good. I'm doing this to be part of the group. And there's shared responsibility. It's interesting and a little scary.
It's so funny because I have such an aversion to that person. Like, Blay is that guy. And he's like the guy rising up to get the mob around him. And I've, like, almost made a career trying to dethrone that guy. But, like,
yes, you have.
But what I'm saying is, like,
I don't appreciate.
But when that happens in the group, I'm like looking around, like, this guy's full of shit. We got to take this guy down. But no, that's not a common thing. I think you're right. There's, like, this weird, like, oh, someone's gonna lead us, so let's follow along. Yeah,
yeah. I don't have to lead us. Yeah. I don't have to make decisions. This guy's gonna do it. Awesome.
Yeah, look at Trump.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
We're just dealing with the last 4 years of this crap. It's insane. Yeah. But no, I totally agree, and it's a weird thing. I think I'm so fascinated by psychology, and that's why I love this episode and love this topic, because it is, group dynamics are so interesting, and I also think it's really interesting that, to my knowledge or experience, I feel like once you get a certain critical mass of people, we all revert to high school and cliques. And all these things, and who's cool, and trying, oh man, like, I perceive this person is cool, so I want to follow them, or, you know, oh, these people are weird, they're not like me. It's such a fascinating, I don't know, I just love it. It's really cool to see how we kind of all try to interact both being true to ourselves, but also trying to please
and
others.
And so cool group. How none of us, I mean, we know Ethan and we knew Brett in that game, but really we didn't know, not everyone knew everyone. So, and it's just so natural that everyone just like takes sides all of a sudden, you know, it's yeah. kind of freaky. It's kind of scary.
Yeah. I was going to ask if people do it sometimes without knowing they're doing it. Like, I think Blake, you were kind of touching on it because you were saying you wrap lies in truths and that way it seems a lot more natural, or I guess it's a lot more believable for you and the person that you're speaking to.
Sure.
And then you mentioned, of course, our wonderful president, Trump, who I think, if I had to guess, is lying constantly without knowing that he's lying. Like, I mean, sometimes I'm sure he knows, but it seems like watching him speak, he's just even, I don't know, like yeah. unaware of what where reality is.
Malignant narcissist, man.
Yeah, like, yeah. is it, at what point does that skill of, because, you know, like you said, it is psychologically or cognitively difficult, like something that you have to learn and get better at and rehearse. You know, you're saying like if you rehearse your lie, you're going to do it more accurately. So like at what point does that skill of deception, let's say, become an addiction or become something out of your control?
A weapon.
Yeah. A dangerous yeah, weapon, like to yourself.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think. Yeah, this is really interesting. I'm not totally sure. There has been some research basically just showing that people who are a little quicker are better at lying. There is some like connectivity differences between people who are good at lying and people who are maybe not so good at lying. But when it gets dangerous, I mean, I think we all as a society can decide when it gets dangerous. But it's just interesting to, again, think about the human brain and human evolution because, you know, there's a reason that we find coordination rewarding, like just being part of the group and coordinating and doing what the group says is rewarding and sometimes can be more rewarding than actually getting a prize of winning, mm-hmm. right? The idea that it's you're getting enough satisfaction in itself of being part of the group. And by getting that satisfaction, that's going to motivate you to stay in that group. So, yeah, it's tricky.
Wow. And do you think that we're getting better at being able to detect it? Like, I was trying to do some research into lie detector machines, and from the very minimal research that I have done, it was showing essentially that, like, we're kind of in the same place that we were however many years, like decades ago, that we still can't really definitively tell.
And I think any kind of lie detecting technology, it's best guess. And, you know, even the best stuff that we can do with brain imaging studies, we'll see like, oh, you know, people who are lying have increased activity in this, but that's in testing lots of people and then finding an effect. It's not every individual that you put in a lie detector or in a brain imaging study, you can tell this is a lie, this is not. Those are just general effects. So whether we're going to be able to like read people's minds and whether lying or not, I don't think that'll ever be the case. And I don't think that we necessarily should get to that point with neuroscience.
George Orwell, thought police. Yeah.
Yeah.
I also think we need that. I mean, also, right. Lie detectors are measuring if how much you think it's a lie.
Right.
It's not measuring the truth, the fact of a thing. So if you truly believe it, then it's not going to detect it because you truly believe it. And so, it's an interesting thing. I think I got really into, all right, look, I'm a weird guy. Okay. I got really into watching police interrogation videos on YouTube. All right. For a long time. When I would work out,
it would stimulate you.
Yeah. When I would work out, I would put that on.
What kind of workout were you doing? I need to know the details of this.
You know, I enjoy it.
Yeah. What kind of workout were you doing while you watched a police interrogation?
Yeah, I mean, look, it's something to keep my mind off the physical pain I'm in and the emotional pain I'm always in. But so anyway, but that stuff's fascinating because it falls into kind of two categories. One is where they know they've done something bad, and so they can read them. And it's interesting because a lot of these videos on YouTube will back it up and say, okay, hey, when you see how sad she was about breaking her iPad, and then. You know, she's not sad at all about her parents. And it's like, well, that's an obvious thing. But then there's other ones where, like, the killer just believes that they're fine, and those people are so much harder because they don't believe that they're lying. And so it's that's really an interesting thing.
And I know I just shit on you for watching these things, but I've also watched some of these things. Not while I'm working out.
What are you doing when you're sitting? He's in the bedroom.
In the bedroom.
But what I was going to say, yeah.
Well, I'm watching them. Yeah. Okay. I'll leave it.
What
there.
I was going to say was that. What I find interesting about things like that is when the person knows they did something wrong and you can clearly tell and they're being interrogated, but then there's like another piece of information that comes out, like this is just whatever. Like they also stole this thing and they didn't. And you can tell their whole body changes. They're like, whoa, like I definitely didn't do that. You know, like it's a very clear, like they did something wrong. They think they're being interrogated for it. Something else is brought up and their whole body, they like their personality changes. It's crazy.
It's crazy.
You guys got to watch these videos.
Yeah, they are apparently great.
I do not think I want to watch police interrogation videos.
I'm going to make you for an episode. Yeah,
no.
But there's another. So there's this great book. You guys know David Simon, who created The Wire, created Homicide, the TV show, Trem, all these other great shows. He started out as a Baltimore reporter. And he wrote a fantastic true book called Homicide in the 80s, which basically at this point in the 80s, no one had had this kind of unfettered access to a detective unit. And like in that year in Baltimore, there was something like 438 murders, like so much murders happening. And he follows along these detectives. And it's really the psychology of how these guys operate and how they try to catch these criminals is fascinating. And one of the things that I learned reading this book, which everybody should read, is people in many ways want to confess. Right. They want to tell the truth. It weighs on them. And so these people want to tell the truth. So one of these things that the detectives will do is kind of give somebody like a little tiny window where they'll, you know, what they'll start with is, and it's kind of good cop, bad cop a little bit, but say all these terrible things. But you know what? If you tell us what it is, we can maybe make it a little bit easier for you and just give them a little bit of a window. And then they'll say, oh, they'll jump at that chance because they want to tell, you know?
Yeah. Isn't that also why they like return to the scene of the crime and do those types of behaviors? Because like, they're just, I don't know. I think I read also there's a part of like every criminal that will push the envelope more than they should because they want to be caught.
They want to be caught.
They want the recognition or something.
Yeah. Or just something. I mean, but that's a fascinating thing, you know, like to me, it's kind of like, these people know they've done something wrong. They want to confess.
Well, yeah, that's like when I like to go back to the game almost or in games similar to this. I like to lie and I like it when it works. But if no one knows after, then it sucks.
Right.
Then it's like whatever. So that kind of goes to these murderers or whatever, you know, like people who commit crimes. It's like they had a satisfaction in getting away with it. And then there's this like need to like tell people like, hey, look what I pulled off.
I'm cool, right?
Yeah.
Well, but think about for a second how different Among Us would be to RJ's point, which I totally agree with. Think about how different it would be if at the end of every round you didn't find out who is.
It would suck.
It didn't say victory for either team. It just ended.
Yeah, you would want to get everyone's emails and email them that I just lied to everyone.
Because the other thing that Among Us and Shannon, to your point, the other thing that Among Us does is when you at the end of the round, it says victory and has the entire team of crewmates, or it says defeat and it has the two imposters there. So that is the little dopamine in your head. It's rewarding you for either surviving with your crew or killing the crew by showing the people who won, which I think is really fascinating. And I wonder how that game would be different if it didn't do that.
I think it's to that point, I think it's really interesting because you do find out who everyone was. And the whole point of the game, I think, is to play multiple rounds with people, right? And we know from, you know, psychological studies and game theory and stuff like that, that the more you play with someone, your strategy changes, you know, of who.
Not mine.
Except for yours.
Yeah, but what?
I need to get you in a psychological study where it's like a prisoner's dilemma and you're just like, I blow up the room.
Easy. The only way to win is not to play. 100%.
He comes in and introduces himself as Blitzkrieg Blake.
Well, normally you, but you guys made, but this is another thing that you guys made me, right. Or you asked nicely to be my own name. Normally I'll be like, you know, let's kill RJ or something as like the title right away.
Usually.
I mean, everything I do.
When I'm not even there.
Yeah. Who's RJ? But that's a thing
but
too.
But to those strategies, yeah. It sucks to be someone who is good at being the imposter or good at being a liar when you play a bunch of games in a row. And then people start to catch on to that and carry that information onto a new game. That sucks. Because then when you're not the imposter and everyone's like, oh, it's they've been the imposter a few times and they've beaten us every time. Well, let's just vote them out right away. That sucks.
Right.
Right.
Well, it gives people a control group. And by being a character right up front, I'm not giving people.
That's why I want to play these games with a new set of people every single time so that I can defeat them.
Not how
every
it works.
Time.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, it kind of reminds me of playing poker because like the strategy at the beginning of poker is kind of the same deal. It's kind of like you want to just absorb as much information as you can, get people's patterns, and then that way you can catch them in a lie.
Yeah,
exactly. Yeah, no, 100%. But I mean, the other thing too is I think it's fascinating how, I mean, look, everyone lies in ways that we don't really even understand. Like, someone asks you like, hey man, how are you? Oh, I'm fine. Thanks. And, well, you're not fine. There's something going on. Everyone's got something wrong all the time.
That's like a polite social lie.
Yeah. But it's like, right. But you're lying to the other person and you're lying to yourself by saying something that's not true. Like, so I'm fascinated by those little tiny lies we tell ourselves. Or, you know what's interesting? Oh, sorry.
I was just saying, I'm lying by asking, how are you? Do I really want to have a conversation about everything that's bad about
that's
you?
That's a great point.
Yeah. Whoa. Double lies. We're just, everyone's lying to each other.
That's a really
good
point.
But don't you think things like that have transcended the actual question and the actual answer? Now it's just more of like a greeting. You know what I mean?
Sure.
Like, are we really lying when we do that?
I think it's some way of trying to get some information, because even if, you know, somebody is lying, they'll probably give you some kernel of truth in there, or some kernel of like, oh, I can latch onto that. I can ask about maybe this little detail or something.
Even if it's not in their verbal response, it could be in the
right.
Voice.
Right. Yes.
Or in their language and all that stuff. I think one thing, and this might be a little bit of a divisive issue, that's why I'm such a good podcast guest.
Please. Another lie.
One thing I've noticed about during quarantine that comes around is, and when we talk about lying and lying to ourselves and these things, I saw at the very, so I'm a person who, I'm a psychopath, I'm a maniac, I work all the time, I love making stuff, and I make stuff all the time. And I also love to work out and all these things. I saw a thing right at the beginning of quarantine that was going around when quarantine started that was like, you don't need to, guys, it's okay. Just take care of yourself. Self-care during this time. Don't worry about writing your book. Don't worry about getting in shape and all this other stuff. And I've seen that come around again now that there's a vaccine and stuff. It's like, guys, it's okay. You know what? You're going to be fine. These last 10 months, you've just been working on you, and that's okay. And I think that's really fascinating, because I think what that is a response to people being very unhappy and wanting to lie to themselves that they were doing the right thing. Mm-hmm. I think that people, now look, I do believe self-care is important. And I think that people should have been taking care of themselves and during this time. But I think it's lying to yourself to not acknowledge the fact, if you wanted to get in shape and you were unhappy about it, lying to yourself, I don't think is healthy or a smart way to go. I think it's also okay to be like, you know what? I took care of myself. I'm disappointed that I didn't do X, Y, or Z, but I did do that, you know? So that's an interesting thing that I think has been happening during quarantine that I don't like. I don't like that non-acknowledgement of that feeling, because I think we all need to be honest with ourselves about how we feel.
Yeah, I'm...
Unpack that one, Shannon.
Yeah,
unpack that one.
Bam.
Here's the hot potato.
I think I'm going to be on the other side of that. I think that this is...
Yeah, me too.
I think this has been an incredibly stressful time for many, many different reasons for many, many different people. I know that. But I think in terms of creating narratives and the narratives we want to put out there, people are always going to be hard on this. Maybe not everyone's going to be hard on themselves. people are always going to be hard on themselves and think that they should be doing more, especially when they're isolated and they're not getting kind of like the social interactions and the, you know, like, you're doing a good job of like, keep on going. It's like, we kind of need to change the ideas we put out there, because ultimately the goal is just for everyone to make it through this.
To survive.
To survive.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, yeah. But to disagree with Blay and to jump on this Shannon wagon, I think that we live our lives, the big lie that we tell each other, ourselves, and it's like just tricking ourselves in order to survive, is that we're going to just keep living. You know what I mean? Like, no one wakes up every day and is like, well, we're going to die in the next couple. Like, so I think sometimes, to Shannon's point, these like tricks to ourselves or these lies to ourselves make just living in this, whatever this is, COVID state, like a little bit more comfortable. And I think that that's okay.
I agree. I'm not arguing that. What I'm arguing is the non-acknowledgement of disappointment, which I think is not good.
I'm with you, Blay. Sorry to interrupt, but no, I please, wanted to balance
ahead.
This
Ethan,
out so that it's 2-2. Keeping points as
RJ's
if it's a game.
Yeah.
This is a big Among
Us.
Yeah,
I don't know,
game.
RJ.
Pro self-care, anti-self-care, what side are you on?
Yeah.
Life is a big Among Us game.
No, listen,
I've been trying to push RJ out of the airlock since birth.
As soon as this quarantine's over, man. It's hard for me. I'm a little bit on the fence, but I'm more on Blay's side only because I do think, and maybe this is like a cultural thing or like a societal thing that I'm just noticing more lately than ever. I think that there is this need to tell ourselves that we're all right, and not just ourselves, but like people in our inner circles or outer circles sometimes. Like, I am a very driven dude, not trying to seem narcissistic. I just know that about myself. I like to get a lot done. And so when I speak to my friends, I don't want the sugarcoating conversation. I don't want to hear, oh yeah, I've been great. You know, sometimes I'll speak to a friend or a family member and that's all that I'm getting pretty much. It's just like, everything's great. And it's like, first of all, that's never true. Everything is definitely not great. There's always things that are wrong, either with you or things that are around you. And then two, it's like, I just want to hear what you want to improve on. And I want to hear what you have failed at and then how you're going to fix it. Because none of us are perfect human beings.
You want to hear what I failed at? Dude,
yeah, dude.
Hold on.
It drives me further too. I think that's what Blay's getting at. Am I wrong?
Yeah. What I'm getting at is just, I don't think
it's more interesting.
You don't need to dwell on it. But you also, I think being on the other side of the spectrum, ignoring it is also unhealthy. I think it's good to acknowledge disappointment and pain. Because that's how we improve, to Ethan's point. And I think this thing of like, oh, it's fine. You know what? You might have had a plan, but fuck that. You're doing great. It's like, well, no, I think you can hold those two thoughts in your mind at the same time.
But
I need to self-care, but I also would like to get this done and I didn't, and that's bad, and that's okay.
There's a balance. Yeah.
There's a balance.
The balance is huge, and I just want to hear the balance.
I
don't want to hear one side.
Yeah, see, I don't want to hear the balance because I understand already that everyone is going through shit. So I don't need to hear it, and I don't want to hear it. If I'm talking to my friends, like you three, I want to hear something good, something fun, like social interactions. It's all part of that like group part of that game.
It's all about you.
No, it's not about me.
We should change our behavior and what we're saying because you don't like to hear it. That's what I'm hearing.
No, what I'm saying is I don't think.
Oh, I'm sorry. Am I making you upset by bringing up something sad?
No, but I think you're just being redundant. Because everyone is, and everyone gets it.
Jesus Christ.
You know what I'm saying?
RJ's like, life is pain. Life is pain.
Life is pain. Bury it deep.
I was born in the dark, molded by it.
I'm sensing is that we're going to have different groups of people, people who want to share their pain and people who don't, and they're going to stick together. And, you know, when they're hanging out together, they're going to have a lot of oxytocin flowing, you know, just to bring it back to the science.
I don't know what that is, but it's flowing.
It's flowing. That social bond.
It sounds like something you need to fix in Among Us.
Yeah. Guys, my oxytocin, I can't come out. I have an oxytocin flow, whatever that word was, leak in my apartment. No, but I guess what I'm saying is I'm all for self-care and all for people being comforted and that stuff. But I do think there is this thing where letting yourself off the hook completely is, I think, is just as bad as dwelling in the darkness. I think there is a balance there.
Right.
You know, and it's like, oh, fuck it. I'll just eat another bag of Doritos. Well, no, you don't. You ate a bag. Why eat two? Like,
well,
no,
one
not fuck it.
D's and one okay, cheese Doritos. Right. I'm going to eat both.
Yeah. You got to have both.
Yeah.
I'm a crunchy Cheetos man anyway, so I'm not a Dorito guy. But that's kind of my point is I think that there is, I like self-care. I'm obviously very for it, but I don't agree with this whole, like, let's just put a layer of, let's just, you know, plaster the whole thing over, because it's important to remember this is a horrifying time and we need to band together as people. And if we start thinking, like, here's where my mind goes. If we start thinking it's all fine, it's all good, it's all going to be fine. Hey, why wear a mask? There's going to be a vaccine, right? Fuck it. Why? It's all
that's the extreme
fine.
For well, sure. No. For sure.
It is the extreme. But I'm saying that it is a thing of like, well, let's all acknowledge this is a scary, dangerous time. We still need to wear masks. The vaccine hopefully is coming, but let's all, even after the vaccine is out, let's all acknowledge that it's scary. And I think people just see something, they get afraid and they shut down or they respond to it with, well, I'll be fine. And it's like, well that's not, I don't think that's how
I think it's building on the lie. That's the part that bothers me. And that's why I'm such an obsessive comedy fan. Sorry, Shannon. I was just going to say that, like, I think in comedy, what's so great is that it's like the truth wrapped in this nice bacon. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? It's like delicious and fun and, you know, I don't know. I think it's important to like say both, like, give me the raw stuff. Even, you know, I'm not even saying you have to like post whatever, like that's something different. That's a different lie. But if you're talking to me on the phone, it's like, you can tell me the real deal and then we can laugh about how fucked we are.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. And like the Colbert Report was one of my favorite shows because he was playing, Stephen Colbert was playing this character and just saying lying shit the whole time about truth.
Right.
And
right.
It just highlighted, his lies highlighted the truth in a very comedic way, which I thought was very effective.
Just because I kind of brand myself as someone who studies self-care, I would say the goal of self-care ultimately is to give yourself the break so then you can deal with the stresses. It's not to ignore the stresses.
Right.
It's to give yourself a bit of relief.
Yeah.
You know, just like anything that you learn in therapy and stuff. It's to give yourself that moment to kind of distance yourself. So you can say, okay, now I can take the pile on myself and parse through it.
100%. Yeah, giving yourself the space. I totally agree. To giving yourself the space is so important.
I think it's not two on two anymore. I think, Shannon, you just encapsulated it perfectly, and we're all on the same page.
Yeah. And let's vote her out of the
airlock. She's out.
See you, Shannon! She's the imposter.
Knew it!
I think it's interesting, too, like how I would love to see a study of when people play Among Us, and they get killed by someone and then are paired up with them the next go around.
How scared
they would
are.
React.
Yeah.
How scared. But you know what I'm saying? Like, are we going to work together as a team, even though you just stabbed me in the back?
Right. Yeah.
You know, is the common goal of us murdering everyone else on the ship overriding the fact that you just killed me and you lied to my face? I mean, I think that's a fascinating how people can switch allegiances. Interesting.
Well, there is interesting psychological research on this where, you know, they all these like kind of neuroeconomics, game theory type studies, they've looked at, you know, how people will work against their own self-interest if it means like getting revenge on someone who screwed them over the last round.
Totally.
And that they find and that that rewarding. They find their revenge as rewarding as, you know, if they were to win.
Mm-hmm. That's fascinating.
Damn.
That's fascinating.
I mean, is that just a lack of like not thinking about the why, you know, like do people just not zoom out enough and go, wait a minute, why am I doing this exactly? What's my goal here?
I mean, I think it's, you know, again, in people who study neuroeconomics and game theory, the idea is that, in the perfect situation, you would do this outcome because that gets you, you know, the biggest prize. But humans are complicated and we're affected by ideas of equity and, you know, revenge and and fairness and all these things that are built into our brains because, you know, they helped us survive for, you know, so long. But So yeah, it's we're not a perfect system, or maybe we are a perfect system because maybe that's good.
Oh, or maybe you know what? Perfect. Maybe there's just a couple of us, like I don't know, maybe me, who are working in an imperfect system, a perfect person.
Yep.
In an imperfect system. Mm-hmm.
That's what I've read about you.
Yeah.
All right, we're gonna take a quick break, and we'll be right back.
The break is over. Here we go, back to the show about science.
I wanted to ask you guys, as writers, speaking about revenge and lying and such, a villain, I feel like a good villain, and correct me if I'm wrong, I could be wrong, needs to believe their BS or believe their lies, right? Like a villain can't just be out to do evil, mm-hmm. unless it's, I don't know, like a comedy or a mockery or something, but to be like a believable, true villain, they always think what they're doing is just, right?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. And I'll even go farther and say, not even just a villain, but like a good, like, whatever you would call like Michael Scott. Like it works in comedy too. That guy is a buffoon, but he completely believes everything he's saying. And I think that always works better and like resonates better because to him, you're like watching someone who like 100% believes everything they're saying, but compared to the environment around him, it like makes no sense. And that I think is what is funny or evil in like what you're saying for like a villain.
Yeah, I would even go one step further and say like, I think it's really interesting when you think about a story and you think about the narrative center of that story. Like Unbreakable is the perfect example that I like to use with villains who think they're doing the right thing. So I'm going to spoil the movie, but Unbreakable is Bruce Willis has superpowers and is a good, actually turns out to be a real good superhero in real life. And Samuel Jackson turns out to be a villain in real life, a supervillain who's been killing all these people, but he's doing it to try to find these superheroes so they can basically save people. I think when you talk about stories and like RJ said with Steve Carell and Michael Scott, it's where's the narrative center? If we were shown, if The Office was a story told about Michael Scott and his trials and tribulations in The Office, we would see him as a sympathetic character and everyone else would be morons and idiots and others screwing everything up. But we're shown a different view, so he is the outlier there. And that's really true. I think every character, period, should always think they're doing the right thing, just like in real life. We're all just trying to get by and we think we're doing the right thing mm-hmm. for the most part. And so it's like, but where, as a storyteller, where are you setting your narrative center? And that's how you're portraying heroes and villains.
That's why it's so important. This is just a message for everybody, I think, to hear both sides of the story, right?
Yeah.
I mean, if everyone thinks that they are right and they're the hero of their own life,
yeah,
they're probably bending some realities when they're telling you this person is wrong or this person did this, you know, and it's like, well, maybe hear it from them also before just like absorbing their information.
Totally. That's why I love unreliable stories with unreliable narrators. Like you think about Fight Club and it's like where the unreliable narrator thinks they're doing one thing, but in reality they're not. But we don't know that because we're only seeing their POV. I totally agree. And I think when it comes to trust, and I think it comes to games like Among Us, I would never go with somebody like myself who plays that game, who has one myopic point of view, because that to me says you're lying regardless.
Yeah.
To your point, Ethan, I think that people who tell the truth acknowledge more than one side. And even if you are telling the truth, if you have a myopic, straight ahead point of view, I am much like less likely to trust you than if you were like, well, I don't know. I think so. You know?
Yeah. So we've talked a lot about like the lying strategy, but this is making me think, you know, I'm a big fan of the show Survivor, right? And on that show, that's a very similar game in that you have to lie to people, you have to backstab people. But in order to win someone's trust, like what is the strategy in that? Like I think like in that show, it's usually someone will divulge like a very small amount of information and then that's enough to keep people around. But in a game like this, how do you get people on your side? Right. Not like Blaze thing where he just like kind of goes crazy and he comes in real hot, but like how do you, if you actually want to get people on your side, how do you get people to trust you which is kind of the opposite of what we're talking about.
I am so excited you brought up Survivor because the past 2 weekends I've watched a full season of Survivor. I have never watched Survivor, and then I decided to start watching it in full seasons. So Survivor's been on my mind, and everything I see is through Survivor lens because it is so interesting. It's such a world. And Among Us, it's interesting because the idea of Among Us is you can't have alliances, which is so much of Survivor. So much of Survivor, the game, is going into alliances with people, even though you know that only one person is going to win. So everything you say, it's like we're going to pretend we have trust in people, but everyone ultimately is going to
lose,
vote you out at some point.
Mm-hmm.
But with Among Us, there kind of isn't that, because maybe if there were multiple rounds of Among Us, and maybe they should build something like that,
where
like you're trying to, you know, win so many rounds and then you win the ultimate round, I think it would totally change the strategy.
Hmm. Okay. I like that.
I mean, you can have alliances in Among Us. I'm not a Survivor guy, but I am a Big Brother guy, which is basically Survivor indoors.
Yeah, yeah.
And I love that.
Yeah.
I absolutely love that kind of thing. I love watching it. It's fascinating the way people do,
because
alliances.
It's like, because you, in order to get someone in a game like this, in order to get someone to trust you, you have to lie to them inevitably. So it's like, what is the?
No, you don't.
I mean, you kind of do if you want to win, and if you want,
learning a lot about
if you're playing Survivor, only one person wins. Same with Big Brother, I assume. So, like, inevitably, you have to lie to someone if at the same time as getting them to trust you.
Why?
Because don't you have to vote them out?
I think, and if Blay you tell is just someone, saying this because Blay is going to be on the next season of Big Brother.
Oh my god!
And it's just gonna,
are you announcing that here, Blay? Is this an exclusive?
You know what's fun is I never do this, but I pulled a few strings years ago to be able to have lunch with a guy from Big Brother, Dan Geesling, who's like one of the big, he's one of the best people to ever play the game.
Big Brother.
And I had lunch with him, and he's such a cool dude. And it was so fascinating to talk to him just about like being in that house. Because the other thing about that, here's the other thing is in life, we are not trapped with each other, so we can't call each other on everything. In Among Us, you're on the ship.
Right.
Where were you? What were you doing? You were doing this. In real life, we don't have the ability to have such a closed environment, so we really can't call people on their bullshit as much. So it really kind of, Among Us and Big Brother and Survivor distills that into, oh my God, are you lying? Are you not? Which is like, in real life, we might not even know. Like if I'm telling RJ, we're going to have lunch at 1 p.m., but I'm kind of running late. I'm like, hey, man, and I'm running late because, I don't know, I didn't plan my bathroom breaks. I drank too much hot coffee, and I spent too much time in the bathroom. I don't want to tell him that. I'm like, oh, it's traffic.
Well, I'm assuming
I'm lying to
either
him.
Way.
Really, the lie would be, the lie would be like, I was stuck in traffic. He's like, you're taking that crap. But no, I'm really, but so I think that's the thing too is, you know, we tell lies, to your point, Shannon, for different reasons. And some of them are survival. Some of them are sociological. Some of them are emotional. I don't want to hurt RJ's feelings.
Yeah. I think that's part of the fun of the game, too. Kind of like, I think we were talking about at the beginning, like it's a safe, stressful environment. Like we never get the opportunity with our friends, close or not close friends, to call them out on their crap. You don't do that. It's not a polite move to say, you know, oh, I think you're lying about where you got those shoes because I was there on Friday and blah, blah, blah. You know, like that never happens.
It's like a lying fantasy camp. It's like why escape rooms are so, and you know, fun, because it's like a fantasy camp for actually being in a situation where you have to escape.
Yeah. And maybe it's true. Maybe it's like evolutionary, or like it's innate in us. Like when we were, you know, more primitive, you were in stressful situations, whether you liked it or not. And it was just kind of like you had to, you know, Blay, why isn't this built yet? We needed this built. Yeah. It's going to rain tomorrow, predicted by the shaman. What the hell is wrong with you? You know, whereas today, everything is very, you know, cordial and like, oh, it's nice to see you. That's a beautiful drink. I would like one as well. You know, it's all very polite. So I think there is something fun and like, I don't know, it just it sparks us up, right? To just call each other out and yell at each other a little bit. It's fun.
True. Yeah,
it's fun.
It
fun.
Does. Yeah, it does. Yeah, no, I mean, it's like the lying thing, I think it's just so ingrained in our evolutionary traits, that I think that's something that'll always be fascinating to us, is kind of like, you know, the kind of, because I also, when we watch things, we're trying to learn from them too. So it's like when I'm watching a TV show like The Affair, which is told in dual POVs and neither one matches up, who am I believing? And also, what am I learning from that? And as people lie, like, ooh, that they got away with that lie, I'm going to store that away. You know, those kinds of things. So.
Right.
Did you guys ever see the movie Invention of Lying? Ricky Gervais?
No. Well, yeah, I did see that.
You know what? It's not a great movie. And I think it's because, like, the first half of it, before he invents lying, is pretty boring. It's like all the characters just kind of saying, I think there's something about lying that just like adds a little bit of like fun and spice, even if it's not hurting anyone. You know what I mean? Like it just
some mystery,
just like suspense. A little makes everything a little bit more interesting.
That's right. I hate to say this, but I have to go very soon because I have to go pick my mom up at the airport.
Okay, so, no problem. Guys. Say hello to your mom.
It's quite.
I really do have to go very soon. Yeah.
Yeah. Wow.
No problem. Shannon, you wanted to get something in. Seemed like you had a thought there.
Yeah, just I think it also relates to this idea of playing pretend and playing games, especially ones where you're playing a role, is playing pretend. It's why we like role-playing games and things like that. And we've liked them since we were little, and we first developed this theory of mind, this idea that we can, and the why we write stories and all these things. It's fun to think about what other people would think, what different characters would think, to then play those characters and be outside of ourselves, I think is, something that's very human.
Yeah, definitely. Sure. Well, thank you guys for playing with us today and for being on the show, of course. RJ Blay, where can people find you, listen to your pods? What's up?
Yeah, thank you so much for having us. We are at Hear Me Out, hearmeout.com. Our podcast is called Hear Me Out. Thanks so much.
Absolutely.
And we lie to ourselves every episode, basically, every week. That's right. And if you want more video game stuff, listen to my podcast, Good Game, Nice Try. And you can go to goodgamenicetry.com.
And if you want to hear Ethan on our podcast, you can go to the Hear Me Out episode where where Blay tries to convince me to quit the a cappella group I'm in.
That's right. It was a very heated episode. It was very fun to do. So definitely go listen to that.
A lot of truths were told in that episode.
Yes, very personal truths.
Yeah.
Dr. Shannon O'Dell, your podcast, where can people find you?
Yes, so you can find me at the podcast, The Science of Self-Care. I'm also a cast member on the Cyberpunk Shadowrun Actual Play podcast, Fun City. So you can find me there. And you can find me on social media at Shodell.
Awesome. Shodell. Love that. All right. Thank you guys so much. Have a good time. Tell your mom hello from us, Blay. And we'll see you next time.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Bad Science is a Seeker podcast produced by Emily Feld and me, Ethan Edinburgh. Our editor is Lucas Bollinger, and our social media is managed by Blue Whale Media. Shout out to EJ and Kate.
And the executive imposter-ducer is Brett Kushner.
Oh, follow us on Instagram at BadSciencePod. If there's a movie you'd like us to discuss on the podcast, feel free to email at badscience@seeker.com. That's badscience@seeker.com. And please leave us an iTunes review. Give us 5 stars. I sound like an Uber driver, but it does help. It makes sure people know about the podcast, which we really appreciate. Thanks for listening. Bye.